Welcome to Cultimatum, the podcast that delves deep into the culture of complexities of cults and human trafficking. I'm your host, Anonymous Andrew. Each week, we explore different facets of cult life and human trafficking, from the psychological manipulation to the brave stories of those who have escaped.
Hello, everyone. I'm Melody. I'm Andrew's co-host. Having experienced the depth of a cult firsthand, specifically the House of Yahweh, I'm here as an advocate for fellow survivors. My journey has inspired me to help others who find themselves in similar situations. This podcast is committed to respecting our guests' privacy to ensure their comfort and safety. We offer them the option to remain anonymous.
Additionally, we would like to include a disclaimer. The views and opinions expressed by our hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of Cultimatum or its affiliates. Cultimatum is not responsible and does not verify for accuracy any of the information shared by our hosts and guests. The content discussed on this podcast is based on personal experiences, opinions, and speculation, and should not be construed as professional services or advice. Neither the host nor the guest are assuming liability for any misuse or reliance on the information presented. This podcast is for informational purposes only, and listeners are encouraged to conduct their own research and seek professional advice where appropriate.
Before we dive into today's episode, we want to issue a trigger warning. Some episodes may explore explicit and potentially disturbing topics such as sexual abuse, rape, human trafficking, suicide, and other sensitive subjects. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome to Cultimatum Podcast, the culture of cults and human trafficking. And with me today is Melody. Hi, Melody.
Hi, Andrew. We have got a very special guest today. This is something unique and different we haven't done before, but we have Ciaran Warner, who is the cult hunter. He has a very big presence on TikTok, which is where I found Ciaran, and he is here to share with us some of the things that he does and some of the things that he's investigated, cults he's investigated. So, Ciaran, welcome to the show.
Oh, well, I'm happy to be here. Thanks for having me on.
When Melody found you and came to me, I said, wow, absolutely. I was a big Ghost Hunters fan back in the day. And when I heard Cult Hunter, I said, we got to have this guy on. So absolutely. No, our pleasure. Welcome to the show. All right, let's get into it.
It's a pleasure to be on, I'll say. I knew good. About you guys before you knew about me.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I'm flattered. Okay. We're flattered. Okay. So I guess the first question is how did you get started in doing this?
Well, I was a magazine reporter for a long time. I worked at an alt weekly in Minneapolis, and I ended up in 2016, I started working on a homicide story, a true crime story where the victim was from Minneapolis, where I live. And the crime occurred in Alaska, and it brought me to this kind of strange place in Alaska. And in that process, in sourcing that story, I had a source who had all the answers to everything, who knew everything, who just had answer after answer after answer. And I was like, she was like, you better trust me. And I was like, I trust you 100%. You definitely have the goods. And I got sucked into this universe. What I found out was a destructive cult called The Body, or known most frequently as The Body.
There's many different types of cults. Were they spiritual cult, religious cult?
It's MLM. A destructive religious cult, Christian cult, it's like a Hebrew fundamentalist sort of Christian cult.
Okay.
Hebrew fundamentalist Christian cult. Wow.
Yeah, and I was an atheist when I found this, I should say. I'm no longer, the funny thing is that as I've waded into this, I actually could no longer tell anybody that I'm an atheist because I've seen too much. But in this process, me, an atheist at the time, got sucked into this super hyper religious fundamentalist thing. I didn't see it as religious sort of at the time, other than like acknowledging that, like, oh yeah, like God is all around us and
okay, wait, I'm gonna clarify here. When you say you got sucked in, this means you got sucked in as a member of this group, or you got sucked into being interested in investigating it?
See, this is kind of confusing. This is like a, like, especially for people who've been in cults before. Like, it's kind of like, for me, like, I was looking at information that they definitely had, and they didn't want that information to come out. So the strategy that they took was just getting me to buy in to this person and sort of pulling me into it. But I wasn't pulled into like the cult leader. It was somebody in the leadership circle who was charismatic and had these attributes that you find, like, but she wasn't doing it like her, like, it wasn't her decision to come after me or whatever. That was I blame that on leadership.
Okay. So she was trying to pull you into being a member. Is that was their goal?
Yeah, and she was a news reporter. She was a news director at a radio station in Alaska called KSRM Radio Kenai, Alaska. It's beautiful there. I've been there a few times.
So it's fair to say that when did you cut ties with them?
Well, okay, so like the thing about like this experience is that you have no idea it's happening when it's happening to
right.
you.
Right.
So what's funny is that like I was recording my phone calls while this was going, because I was a reporter. I was like, whenever I talked to somebody in Alaska, they were the source, and it's like a single party consent state. I mean, this was like a reporterly thing I was doing, but people would tell me like, hey, watch out. That woman you're talking to, she's in a cult. Like, and there's penis washing and there's all this weird stuff with her. And I thought that was the most absurd thing I'd ever heard. I thought it was total character assassination. It took about a year and a half until somebody that I was sourcing for the story, who was like a NPR reporter, like a Alaska Public Radio reporter, was like, I investigated that woman. She's in a cult. I have tapes from it. Yada yada. Like at that point, it was like I just knew instantly. But even like, I mean, the thing is that people warned me about this stuff like all the time. That was just a thing. And I just thought it was insane until I.
Right,
until
and you
I
probably
really
thought, well, I'm not
going to
get
real.
Sucked into this.
I'm too smart.
Right? Yeah, well, well, I was going to say something about scams, but that people get sucked into scams who are very intelligent. So it you could
yeah,
be.
Yeah, I mean, it's yes. one of these things. It's like it's a stereotype that people have that, like, they see these documents. They look at Heaven's Gate or something, and they're like, all these people are morons, like, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. And it's like, do you have any idea how advanced, like, these people were at, like, internet stuff, like, in 1996?
Yeah.
These were, like, brilliant people. Otherwise, it wouldn't work. Like, cults would not work if they were full of idiots. Like,
right.
It's total bullshit. It's,
correct. Oh, no. Some of the leaders are geniuses on how they pull off
yes.
their manipulation and coercion. And
yeah.
So about what year was this about?
This was so when this was happening, it was 2017. When I realized kind of what was going on, it was 2018. It wasn't really until 2020, though, when the pandemic happened and I started going back through tapes. And hearing myself, like, just kind of just walk up this road that, for this strange reason I had on tape, that I really realized that, like, I knew nothing, actually, and that I needed to, like, start doing some research on my own.
Wow.
So, when did you transition to TikTok?
You know, it was weird. The whole cult story with the body, it's a super long story. And I do other stories about cults. I went from an alt weekly reporter into this strange universe where these are the only stories that I report on anymore. When I went to TikTok, like what had happened is that at a certain point in my reporting on the body, I was calling law enforcement all the time, and I was calling the FBI, and they would not take. I had these tapes where the leader was doing something terrible. They were giving a baby away to another family. They were like posting like my ex-girlfriend's parents' house on Instagram. It was very creepy. They were doing all kinds, and I was just like, I had enough of this. And I called the FBI, and I was like, I need you to take this stuff of mine, like take my hard drive. They wouldn't do it. So I got hung up on it, and at one point it just clicked in my brain, like, I'm going to call the FBI, and I'm going to give them a threat they have to respond to. So I called them, and I told them I was going to murder Senator Mitch McConnell, and I bought a plane ticket to Washington, D.C., and I called and I gave them my entire plot, which was obviously improvised, and I said this, and it was very, like, the phone call was funny. Like, I'm pretty clever. I was a critic
TikTok.
For... yeah, yeah. And it's like...
I have to see this. Okay, go ahead.
So basically, somebody on the internet was like, you have to put this on TikTok and people will see it. And I was like, great, like, just put it on TikTok and people will see it. And they're like, no, you have to. And I'm 39. Like, I'm not like the general TikTok
demographic.
Yeah, exactly. So it took a bit of pushing. But I did notice, like, that there was a conversation already in progress on TikTok, and that the audience just the audience was sort of there for it. Like, it was kind of like it was a cult story, which, like, at the time, like, cult stories were just catching on. Like, when I started doing this stuff, everybody thought I was a lunatic. But like the cult stories were catching on, and also, like, the internet likes ridiculous stuff. And this was like a ridiculous story told with like a little bit of sanity.
Right.
So it worked.
All right. I am on your TikTok page now. You have 139,000 and a half followers and 1.1 million likes. Wow.
It's all cult stuff.
Yeah. That's impressive for, Melody and I have been doing this. What, 6-8 months now? We can't get 10 likes on some of our stuff. But ours are just promos for the upcoming episodes. So I'm not looking for a viral video. You know, we're just promoting.
Honestly, like the thing is that, like, it was younger people. It was people in Gen Z who understood it,
right,
and, like, explained it to me. And, like, every time I was like, yeah, I kind of understand how it goes, they'd be like, no, you don't understand. Like, you don't understand. This is why. This is the time you need to put out your videos. This is how long they need to be. This is, like, the kind of general content. And then, like, over time, too, I also learned, because I'm used to doing long articles. That's where I came from. It's like, you know, the 2,500-word article or more. So it was definitely a transition to being like, oh, I got 90 seconds or 2 minutes or whatever. I think I've learned a little bit over time, just like, if I actually force myself to think about it, I can figure out how to put a little story together in a minute and a half or whatever.
Right.
Well, you did. And I think your editing, the way you put the content together, it is fascinating. So it's basically why you're on the show today.
Yes.
Not only are you a cult hunter, but you're a fantastic content creator. Melody, you have a question?
Yes. What is the strangest cult story that you've covered other than your own?
Strangest. I mean, they're all, there's
that's a given.
Yeah. I guess there's a reality in this bit, like in the biz, this tiny space that I occupy, that, like, the material, I'm never gonna ever run out of material.
Nope.
I would say, I mean, this is such a difficult question because so many things come to mind, but Operation Freakout, which is a Scientology story. I gotta turn my keyboard. I'm trying to think of the journalist who covered that. It's way crazier than anything I've ever covered.
So is it like a spinoff? A spinoff of Scientology, or?
It was the first time a journalist came after Scientology, the way they responded.
So it's called Open Freakout?
Right. Give me 1 second. Paulette Cooper. Operation Freakout. I'm looking at the Wikipedia right now. Operation Freakout is this thing. Paulette Cooper was a journalist. She had a friend that was going down some very strange path in her life, and they were a Scientologist, and she was like, I'm going to look into Scientology and see what this is all about, and started publishing material based on Scientology. And the L. Ron Hubbard's response was like, we're gonna do this thing. I mean, and this is an element of every cult story, sort of, is like, we're gonna scare her into submission, we're gonna scare her into like not doing this thing that she wants to do. Like, it happened. I mean, I've seen it before.
Right.
It happens all the time and in all kinds of different groups, but it's like the Operation Freakout by Scientology was so direct. Like, they were like, we're going to scare the shit out of you. This is how we're going to keep memos and stuff. And what happened in that cult story that makes it just like beyond just insanity is that she was like on trial. For writing a bomb, she threatened to bomb the Scientology headquarters. And Scientology turned her in or whatever. They had a note written by her with her fucking fingerprint on it. And they were like, she was going to get prosecuted in New York City. This is in the 70s.
Oh, wow.
And eventually, like, the FBI broke into the Scientology headquarters and found all this material that, like, everything she had been saying the whole time was real. And it was like the whole, like, she never did any of the stuff they were accusing her of. They were trying to make her crazy, and it was literally called in their own documents Operation Freakout.
Well, that would make a person freak out.
I could, like, mention, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I was going to save this question for a little later, but since we're talking about, what was her name, Paulette Cooper?
Paulette, yes. Cooper, yeah.
Okay.
She's a hero. She's still alive, too.
Okay. So, and you're a journalist. So, are you familiar with Alice Hines?
I know all about Alice Hines.
Okay,
yeah.
I thought you would. So, and Melody, you know where I'm going with this one. This Alice Hines went to Twin Flames Universe, their compound or their house, but I think by now it's a compound. She did a fantastic piece on them from Vanity Fair. And, of course, I don't remember whether Amazon or Netflix picked it up, and then they ran with it and they did the documentary. What are your thoughts on the Twin Flames?
I mean, it's a fascinating story. And it's also like a very modern story. The modern story of cults. I mean, it's like there's this reality that I think our society is sort of afraid to face, which is that there's like we have a lot of loneliness and we have a lot of isolation, where we have kind of isolated ourselves because of the and romance is one of these things that's confusing. I just saw there was a graph in the New York Times a couple days ago that was sort of like where people used to meet, like, their lovers versus where they meet now. And now it's all on the internet. It used to be like 25% of relationships started at work, in the workplace, which I thought was fascinating. But
yeah, that's a pretty high number.
But I mean, for a variety of reasons, I think that cults are having a moment now, not just because Netflix ran out of serial killers, but because like this is becoming like there's this whole component of the online predatory thing that is kind of coming of age now, and is not going to leave us. I don't think.
Well, I mean, I guess Twin Flames is certainly taking advantage of that.
Absolutely. And that, that's where I'm going with that is like the, I mean, Twin Flames is one of these things that like, it, to me and you, it's very, very obvious that this is like the sleaziest thing, but like all the lonely people, there's a Beatles song about that. Like, I mean, this is like a real, like it's kind of a pandemic in and of itself. I like the Alice Hines story for Vanity Fair. I generally like features in Vanity Fair. I don't think that story was sourced as ethically as it should have been. But I certainly thought it was interesting. Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. This is what that story, those documentaries. I have another podcast, so this podcast is a spinoff of that podcast because I posted some stuff about the Twin Flames. I did 7 or 8 episodes like you. I did a little investigation and I had people on, and my audience said, no, we don't want to hear that. Cause my other podcast is about dating, being lonely and what you're talking about.
These things, there's relevance to it though.
There is. And so this is how, but the Twin Flames is what got me started, and that's how I met Melody, because I'm on Facebook looking for groups to join, and I came across her group, and because she's a cult survivor, and she started a group. And anyway, here we are, you know, almost 8 months later, whatever it is. Okay, so we've established Twin Flames. I think Jeff is a genius, but...
He's gone the wrong path, like...
Yeah.
It's taking the wrong path.
People who are criminally insane or the masterminds like these con artists out there, I'm not saying he's one. I'm saying con artists who know how to go after millions of dollars. If they put that genius power to good use or positive use, they could do much better than...
Yeah.
Yeah, so...
I mean, this is something I actually talk about like in my private world, like when I talk to my friends a lot.
Right.
Which is like, if these people like were adjusted properly as children, like they would do incredible things.
Yeah.
But because like a lot of them, like it takes some, you can't be some dummy and like, you got some kind of skill to do this. So if you're going to manipulate people and that's going to be your thing, like, because people generally don't like to be manipulated, but there is a thing, and you see, I see a lot of these people. I guess I usually try to trace it back to their very early childhood, like particularly like ages like 1 to 3. If you kind of look at the research, like it's this kind of attachment, this disorganized attachment thing, where you're so out of control, like the people that are supposed to be taking care of you won't take care of you. And then like you learn to like seek control yourself because that's like the only way you can be comfortable, and nothing is comfortable unless you're in total control. And it's the kind of thing, like another word is like psychopath. Like that's
right.
That's sort of where you exit in this sort of stuff,
and very similar to serial killers too.
Yeah, and I guess I should say that like not everybody who goes through like a traumatic childhood, this is the reason why we don't know this in our society, even though it's been proven by study after study, is it's like it's so socially toxic to say these things because you know, you don't want to stigmatize somebody who had a shitty childhood and turned out totally like they found a way to escape and not be a sociopath or a psychopath.
Because not everybody processes it.
That's what happens to most people. But yeah, some people just cannot, like something really unhealthy happens, and you know, hopefully it's something we can remedy in the future to some degree.
I agree.
So how many cults do you think up from when you started in 2019, I'm guessing, or whenever you launched TikTok to today, how many cults do you think you've covered or investigated?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I guess like I investigate way more cults than I that I like write about or make TikToks about or whatever I do, like in my journalism, just because, I mean, there's a lot of great literature out there, and there's like the cult researcher that I trust most is this woman, Alexandra Stain in the United Kingdom. She has a book called Terror, Love, and Brainwashing. And she just has like a whole bunch of like academic material that like a lot of what you hear me say again, and I hate to say this because I'm sure I get it wrong sometimes, but I steal it. I steal everything, all my research from Alexandra Stain because I just think she's the best.
What's her last name?
Stain.
It looks like Stein. Oh, okay. Stein, but gotcha. It's pronounced Stain.
Okay. Melody, we're gonna have to look her up.
Yes,
she's the greatest. And like the thing is, I've done this before. You guys should try it. Is it's like you can kind of guilt her into an interview. Like this is her world, and it's like, man, this piece would be so much better if I could just get a quote from you. I mean, I guess sometimes I learn the lesson wrong. I want everybody listening to this to know, like Google her, look at the research that she puts out. Definitely, like, if you find copies of her books, grab them, because like if you really want to know cults, she's colder than somebody like Stephen Hassan for sure, or Yanya Lalich. Like she's colder than the cult experts you generally see in the documentaries. But she is like one of these people that like you will be humbled by how intelligent she is when you see her stuff, because she's like, I mean, I think she's a genius.
Wow. Okay. No, that's great information, because we're always looking for the next guest who can shed more light. The audience knows this. I have never been in a cult. And my other podcast is about just romance and dating. And when I met Melody and I got into the cults, I found it fascinating that this was going on. I had just like probably 3/4 of America. I don't think Americans or the world has any clue that there are so many cults out there. You know, whether they're large like the Lemus del Mundo, where they're global, or something small like they're just like a little compound in Vermont or something. They're just everywhere. And I just wanted to get into it and study it and learn it. And the more that I do them and meeting people like you, and then so you just gave us a name to look up. And we did the same thing with lawyers. We spoke to a couple of lawyers who suggested we speak to this lawyer and so forth. So thank you for that.
I would say like this is something that's important that I want people to know, is like when I got into this universe, I had no interest in cult stories. Zero.
Me neither.
I literally thought, like in my brain, I thought that a cult was something that happened about every 10 years. And it was all these weirdos just focusing on this weird thing. And they were all kind of, they wanted to do this crazy thing. And they were just a bunch of weirdos.
Because you would hear about them on TV, like the Doomsday Cult and Heaven's Gate and Johannesburg. Yeah. When it was national news, and then they would go away, and then you wouldn't hear something for 5 or 10 years, and then you hear, and then Waco, Texas popped up, and you know, all of this crazy stuff, but
had no idea.
But in between those big stories are all these
single day, all the time. It's always, it's omnipresent, it's a feature of our society.
Yes.
And when I met Melody, and she says, I'm from the House of Yahweh, which is apparently a very well-known cult, i.e. religious.
Yes.
I gotta be careful.
It's a cult.
High control group.
I've never heard of them. But yeah. I never heard of them, but everybody else has. So, you know, yeah, I'm like you. I had, when I first started, a cult was the, I had my heart broken 3 years ago, and I came on to talk about that. And now I'm doing cults. I'm like, how do you make a jump from that? But passionate.
It's a bug. Like the thing is that like it's a feature of humanity. Like the truth of it all. Like why people are like people are interested in this. And I'm like, yes. I'll tell you. There's something There was a guy who, a deprogrammer, told me this. I interviewed, I'm not going to say his name because I'm afraid I'm going to get it wrong. But I talked to a deprogrammer about this out of Philadelphia. And I was like, you know, these are stories that seem to happen again and again. And he's like, no, that's like the, it's like a feature of humanity. Like the people with power and the people with no power and like the way they sort of, have to interact with each other. It's a dynamic. God, I wish I could remember this guy. Yeah.
Well, but it's the people with power that go after the vulnerable, like the like you talked about, the lonely, the spiritually lost or devoid.
And sometimes it's like the vulnerable. It's like they're only vulnerable. Like I think about when you move when you're like 18. Like when you leave the house that you grew up in, you're so vulnerable to this stuff.
You're going out into the world.
You join college. When you leave college, you go through a big breakup. Mm-hmm. There's so many things that like everybody. I mean, the amazing thing I find like in the comments on my videos and stuff is that the never ending comment is like, who would ever be so gullible to find out like to find themselves in a cult like this? And it's like, you know what? It's you. Anybody asking that question, if you're asking that question, it's you. Because every single person is vulnerable to this stuff.
Or
like a lot of it, too, is generational.
Yes. That's actually a Rick Ross quote, too. He said, the minute you think that you are not vulnerable to getting pulled into a cult, that is going to make you a victim of a cult if you think you're not vulnerable. Because then your guard is down, essentially, because you think, I'm never going to be a victim of that.
And it's the same thing with scams. I'm looking to launch a podcast about scams and go in. There's another whole story. We won't even get into that. But I've been investigating scams, and there are some brilliant people, lawyers, doctors, real estate agents who have, you know, large company, and they get scammed. And you know, so Melody and I say that nobody wakes up in the morning and says, I think I'll join a cult today. They end up doing it because they think it's a nice, it'll take twin flames. These people are lonely. I think right after, during COVID, that was probably the peak of their
membership
uprise or whatever you want to call it. Membership. Thank you. they joined something online because they're stuck at home and, it was, again, this is where I think Jeff was brilliant and how he did it. Anyway, well, let's not go back to that. A topic just popped into my head that Melody and I haven't talked about a lot. It's come up, but you're on TikTok and you seem to have become very good at what you do on TikTok. What do you think about the TikTok dancers cult?
The TikTok dancers cult, it's fascinating. Like, I'm not going to say that it's not fascinating. I will say that the way it was kind of presented to me, it didn't really have any original ideas in the way the story was told, in my opinion. And you have to understand that I am inundated with this stuff all the time, so that like I may lose interest faster than somebody who is new to the stuff. I thought that story was fast. My opinion about it was that, it was the story could have been told in a more interesting way. It really kind of fell into a formula, which I see now, which is like, this is how you tell a cult document. This is how you tell a cult story. And it's like, all right, like these things cost millions of dollars. Like we can do a little better here, in my opinion.
Okay. Yeah. And that popped up months ago, and I don't hear much about it anymore. I don't know where they are, if it's still going on.
I'm sure it's. I mean, I would be surprised if that stopped and I didn't hear about it. Because I mean, this is like that's what I ultimately aim to do. And people I know on the internet that I've connected with, who kind of do the same thing I've done, and they just don't have the nickname or whatever. Like they work on this.
Right.
I would hear if that cult went down.
Yeah.
Because whenever a cult goes down, like we have a little seance and celebrate.
Yeah. Please invite us to the next one. Especially if TFU goes down. I'm throwing a party. So
I'm wearing the loincloth and dancing around the fire. Yeah.
Okay. Melody, you have a question?
Let me see. Well, what you might have already answered this, but what do you think that you've learned the most about cults and cult leaders in doing this?
I guess, like, I mean, the thing that I learned, like, always the most profound thing that I learn is that I really know nothing. That's when I actually, when it's actually profound and I actually go, holy shit, is when I realize that the thing that I'm looking at, I actually don't know anything about it, even if somebody told me about it. And it's not just like the experience I told you about earlier where I got like suckered by this cult member who was deliberately trying to sucker me. It's also like my own expectations, my default setting of like what the story should be based upon my prior history and experience and stuff. Sometimes I'm totally wrong about that. And that is like the most profound thing is really like, is recognizing it and like going back and learning like the part that I missed the first time, or like listening. Like I record a lot of interviews. A lot of times it's like going back, like maybe I missed something in the tape. And there's some lesson there. I mean, but that's, yeah, I mean, that's the biggest thing that I've learned is that I don't always know. Even though I like to think that I do, I don't always know.
Yeah. Well, in any field that you're good at or you're excelling at, you're still, there's a lot more to learn. Melody, did you have something you wanted to say?
Yeah, I was just going to say that that was one of the things that I actually really came to that same conclusion after leaving my own cult, because when I was there, I thought I had all the answers. I thought I knew everything, because they make you feel that way, that we were providing you with all the answers. And then I left. And when I realized it was all bullshit, then I'm like, you know, I really don't know anything. And I'm never going to claim to know anything anymore, because even when you think you know something, you probably don't know it. So it's just like this yeah, awareness that you're like, next,
yeah.
Yeah. And I'm like, well, you're going to find out you're wrong later.
I think that that's actually like an interesting like facet of life though. Like cults kind of show us that, like, if you are blessed to have this shitty situation that nobody should have to go through, like if it happens to you, you do learn. There is this one moment, I mean, it usually happens in a series of moments where you realize you've been duped, and it's like, holy shit. Like, how did that,
yes.
Like, it's kind of like an amazing, like it's an amazing realization where you're just like, I can't believe that. How did that ever happen?
Right.
And it's humbling. And it's also, to me, I guess, like, I've been served dishes like this before I ever got involved in this stuff, so I kind of knew how it tasted, but it was still, like, to me, like, absolutely fascinating. And there's a reality too, just about how you get good at anything in life, how you understand the world and walk through the world is like, it's sort of you like failure and getting duped and that kind of stuff is sort of part of the recipe, which a lot of people like don't ever want to tell you.
Yeah, it's the right. Ingredient in the life lessons.
All right, let's switch gears here a little bit and talk about something that we have been affected by, and I'm sure you have, the legal end of doing cult investigations. Have you, just kind of a silly question to say, because I know what the answer is. Have you received cease and desist orders, or how many have you gotten, and how have they affected your investigations?
I've gotten several. But okay, so the cease and desist is like, it's one of my favorite things. I mean, this is not everybody will relate to this, I guess, but when I get a cease and desist, or when they like publish a story about how I admitted I made up everything, whatever bullshit they say, like, it shocks me at first, and I'm like, holy shit, they're doing this thing. But the reality is that, like, I've been a reporter since 2008. This is like a long time ago. Like, I got my first byline in the Bush administration. My editor was always up my ass. about making sure that everything was right, making sure that I haven't had enough sources. Like, I come from the newspaper world, like, and I've never published anything that I would like take back, because I publish the facts. I'm very, very careful about what I publish. I hear salacious stories all the time that I do not publish because I don't have all the piece. I can't back it all up. Yes, I've been given cease and desist, and I've gotten a lawyer and fired back a response, and that's always worked. Like, they have this idea that is going to beat you because it historically has beaten so many cult cases,
yep.
But they can't fight me with those tools because I'll destroy yep. them.
And from the lawyers that we've talked to, we had one on the show, and we've consulted with some others, and most from our experience and the stories that we've heard or the people we talked to, very, very few cults win any kind of legal litigation. As a matter of fact, it's usually the reverse.
Yeah, they file a bunch of paperwork is what they do, and I'll tell the yes. cults, like, if you want to take care of me, you got to do me like Tony Soprano.
Yeah.
Oh gosh!
You know what? I might steal that from you if I. I
Go because, ahead, yeah.
Because we and one of the reasons that we asked that question is because we didn't directly get a cease and desist, but we got one of our guests that we interviewed got a cease and desist,
mm-hmm.
but it wasn't from a court and it wasn't from a lawyer. It was from the leader of TFU, who emailed her and said, if you don't take that episode down, then I'm coming after you legally.
The best cease and desist I ever got was from this woman, Linda, in Texas, who, if you know who I am, you probably know who Linda is. There's this woman I did some reporting on, and she did hire a real lawyer, like, in the wrong jurisdiction. And it was, none of it was legally binding, but she hired a real lawyer. But the very first line of the thing was like, you are a clout chaser. Like, it looks like a real legal thing, but it's like, you are chasing clout. Here's the dictionary.com definition of clout chaser. And I read court documents all the time for work. Like, I know what court documents look like. They do not, lawyers do not cite dictionary.com, and they do not concern themselves with quote-unquote clout chasing. This was like hilarious. It was, I mean, this is like the most fun day at the office ever.
So she basically wrote that herself.
It's you can hear her voice when you read right. that law, when that cease yeah. and desist, because it's so just on brand. It's totally what she would say. But, I mean, she was paying a lawyer, and the lawyer did, like, to the lawyer's credit, this person was like, okay, I'm going to sort of put this in legalese, but if we have to cite dictionary.com, I know how to do that. But it was just funny. It was hilarious.
So it's fair to say that out of all the investigations you've done and any cease and desist or threats that you've received, legal or otherwise, you've never backed down.
No, nothing would ever stick to me. Nobody would ever be able to get a real right. case against me because I'm yeah. ethical.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And we were given some very, very good advice as to, it's just how you word what you're saying, and therefore you can't get sued for defamation and,
allegedly.
And yeah, have your facts straight before you. Yeah.
Yeah. I will say, right. I will say, like, this is the, like, but this is an addendum to that statement that I just made, is like, there are times that I have an urge to say something or put something out there into uh-huh. the universe. And what I do is I ask my lawyer, ChatGPT, I say, like, is this okay? Is this cool? And if ChatGPT says, don't do that, then I know, like, I'm just going to save that. I'm going to tell my girlfriend about it. And, like, I'm going to be fired up about it, but I'm just not going to do anything.
Yeah. That must be frustrating.
It is frustrating. But you, like, I mean, just generally, like, as a reporter, like, this is a dangerous, this has been a dangerous job, like, historically. And cults, like, you got to think about these people that would literally, anything other than people knowing what's going on is in their best interest. Like, if you stop talking, that would definitely be in their best interest. But we also have, like, the Constitution. We have the First Amendment.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right.
Like, I'm allowed to, freedom of the press.
Yes.
Which is interesting in the modern world, but like this is true. Like, so if I have data and I got sources, I can publish what they say. Especially, right? And I would never publish anything unless I thought it was true.
Right. Okay. I think you kind of answered some of this, but what is your goal and purpose in covering cults and doing this kind of work?
And what's your end goal?
Yeah.
Okay. So I guess cults are these cycles. Like, I kind of mentioned this before, like, a lot of it starts in early childhood with the leader. Like, it's a cycle. And you, in order for the cycle of abuse to stop, it must be disrupted. And that's something is, like, I'm not going off to cover the World Series next week. Like, I'm covering the next cult story. And I do long reporting where, like, I will stay with a story for years and years. And it's just something that I like picked up from journalists that I admired who had grander titles than the cult hunter, is that you just kind of stick to the thing and maybe you can like make a difference. And I talk to people, I guess, like, it's not about me. It's about the person that's like getting out of the cult and realizing right away, like, holy shit, this happened to me. And disrupting the cycle so that it doesn't happen to the next person, which, right, which should be like just a simple, I mean, this is something in journalism, you're not allowed to talk about it because journalism isn't allowed to be that political, even though it always has been.
Oh, yeah.
But like, yeah, the goal is to like, I'd like to see like the body, the cult that you saw me do this video on. Like, I want to see the leader of the body in handcuffs. Yeah. I want to see him in prison.
Oh.
Right.
Like I said, we're going to have a party when that happens. Okay. All right. We got a few minutes left. Let's see here. One of my biggest problems, and I bring this up almost every episode, and it was clearly answered when we interviewed the lawyer, and that hasn't aired yet. So by the time this episode aired, that will have aired, so people will have known. But I find it, and you said it yourself, when you went to the FBI and you said, hey, I got this information about this cult, they didn't want to touch it.
No.
And we're finding cults left and right that are abusing children sexually and physically, and the amount of emotional abuse and so on and so forth. It seems like law enforcement is just not willing to go after, even though when ex-members come forward with physical evidence and proof, they don't go after. Do you have any opinion about law enforcement and why they're not taking this more seriously? Or
So I have a lot of opinions on that subject. What I will say though is that like there is a reality where you, and this is something that I've been smacked in the face with this multiple times, is that you have to learn to play by their rules to get anything. I mean, law enforcement is I live in Minneapolis, Minnesota. We have, our police force is down. We are missing 40% of our officers because a few years back, there was a cop who murdered this guy, George Floyd, in public, and all the other officers that were with him got in trouble for it. And now that there's all this oversight on being a cop in Minneapolis, no one wants to be a cop in Minneapolis anymore.
So they're short-staffed, and cults are at the way bottom of their list, if at all.
I mean, there is this reality where, like, cults are, I mean, you kind of have to be a little clever about whatever tactic you take. Like there is no easy way to do this. or to get the support of law enforcement. Like, sometimes things happen. Like, if you look at trends in the law, like, after Jonestown, cults in the United States did not fuck around at all with cult stories. Like, the Supreme Court would somebody would come in and they'd have a terrible deprogramming and they'd be like, my rights were violated. And the court would be like, hey, go fuck yourself. You're in a cult. Like, we don't put up with that anymore. A lot of it has to do, like, and this is, like, I guess this is true of, like, kind of all court cases, but it's a lot of it has to do with public perception and the outcry and what people think. I mean, this is another thing, like, going back to George Floyd. Like, Derek Chauvin wouldn't have been thrown in prison to get stabbed if there wasn't this a massive public outcry
right.
after a teenager took a cell phone video.
Right.
Wow. Yeah. Well, I think not just Minneapolis. I think across the country, the police forces have dropped, the numbers have dropped. And now that I live in New York City, the crime is skyrocketed now. And I think New York City is short. So, all right. So, but
I do think, like, I would say one thing is that I am optimistic about it in a way where it's like, I do think that they listen to what people care about because that's how they get funded. And if the sort of these agencies realize that, like, hey, people, like, really don't like the cult stuff. They don't like child trafficking. They don't like stuff like that. They will kind of force their hand to do the right thing sometimes.
Okay. Melody, there's a question that you wanted to ask. Do you still want to ask it?
Here's what I'm going to say, because I think we answered it in our pre-interview chat here. But I was going to ask you if you'd ever investigated my cult, which is the House of Yahweh out of Abilene, Texas. The leader was Israel Hawkins. And it sounds like you kind of may be familiar with it. But I'm just going to suggest that maybe you do. He the leader has died, but the organization is still going. Because unfortunately, as a lot of us ex-cult members find out, is that we hope that when the leader dies, the organization will die with it. And most of the time, the brainwashing has gone always so deep that it doesn't work that way. Yeah, exactly. There's always somebody who steps up to take over, whatever it is, and it just continues to go on.
Somebody is usually groomed. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. And in my case, it's apparently now a board of elders. Like 12 of them are now running it. So so if you get a chance, I would just recommend it's fairly interesting story. Israel Hawkins out of Abilene, Texas.
No, absolutely.
And Yahweh, so.
I'm positive it's an interesting story and I will look into it. I guess I always sort of have to have like an entry point into a story. And what I'm interested in with this House of Yahweh, and I told you before, like, I'm familiar with the Yahweh concept and like where it sort of sits in just the cultiverse. But what I'm interested in is the contingency plan. Is like what happens when the leader dies? Like, how do these things? And I guess, like, I would say, like, I visit cults in the real world too. Like, I will go, and like, I'm not going to go someplace where I'm going to be terrified.
Right.
But I can visit group. They don't know who I am. They're not on TikTok. Right. I have visited places before where it is kind of like the last remaining embers of the group. And it's a bunch of sort of like older folks and they're doing and it's fascinating to watch sort of the death of the cycle when it happens.
Right.
But it's also, I mean, sometimes these groups get more terrifying. I mean, I would say, I mean, the first thing that comes to mind, obviously, is Scientology, where, like, you got this monster, L. Ron Hubbard, and he dies, and it's like, that huge relief that that's over, and it's like, now they got fucking David Miscavige waiting right there.
Yeah,
like, exactly. He's ready. He's totally capable of manning the ship.
I just came up with the last good question, and I hope you have, I'm sure you have an opinion on it, but you might have several. What would you say is the most dangerous or the yeah, let's say dangerous cult that is actively operating today. Which cult? If you had to pick a cult, if I could push a button and a cult would go away, who would you pick?
Well, okay, I mean, the most dangerous cult is always the cult in your backyard. That's the most dangerous cult.
Interesting.
It's the one that's closest to you. I mean, there are practical answers to this. Like, ISIS is a pretty dangerous cult. I wouldn't want anybody I knew to be around ISIS. Or
that's a good answer.
Yeah, I mean, like,
I haven't considered them a cult, but now that you say that, it is.
That's a cult.
Yeah. I mean, and there's a lot of like extremists, like the terrorist, like, I mean, the really violent, like, terroristic groups obviously come to mind right away. Where it's like, you know, like God and the leader said
that's
that we
true.
Should do this. I mean, like we just had the anniversary of 9/11. And that's something, like, if you look at that, like if you look at that story and you think, like, this is a story about terrorists, you're not going to learn that much. Like, oh, these people, and that's the story we were sold as Americans. It's like, these people hate freedom. They hate freedom. And it's like, nah, it's a cult story. Like, this guy was a cult leader. He convinced these people to do crazy, insane things they never, ever, ever would have done if they didn't cross paths with him.
With Osama bin Laden.
Yeah. And it's like 9/11, that's about as dangerous as you get. Like,
yeah.
That, I mean, that's the largest loss of American lives in U.S. history. Second largest loss of lives, Americans, is Jonestown.
Right.
Largest suicide ever is Heaven's Gate. I mean, these groups are dangerous. But I mean, I guess, like, there is a reality of where you are, and I hate to say it because it sounds sort of like shallow or whatever, but the most dangerous cult is the one that's like looking at you, or the one that is around you, or like in your community, is like, that's the most dangerous cult.
Yeah.
Okay, Melody, do you have any final thoughts or questions?
Well, I'm just gonna say I agree with him because my son lives in Sutton's Bay, Michigan, which is where TFU is. And it makes me a little nervous, right? Yeah, he's like 4 miles away, I think, from their actual location. So,
wow.
Yeah, that's like right there. So, no, I guess my final words would just be that, you know, we so appreciate you coming on, Siren, and sharing your story with us.
Yeah.
And it sounds like you're a good person for us to collaborate with, because it sounds like your goal is basically to bring awareness, to try to help shut these cults down, to try to make life a little more difficult for them in any way that we can with our little bit of prodding that we do, and just shine a light in those dark places. And we appreciate that you're basically on the same page that we are, where that's our goal too.
Well, yeah. Well, I mean, what you guys are doing is important, though. Like, having a regular discussion about this, because you never know. Like, somebody could accidentally stumble into this episode and learn something.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I learned something. I learned a lot. Just listening to you, I learned. I never thought of ISIS as a cult. But you're right. They are. Osama bin Laden was probably the most dangerous cult leader.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Next to
Hitler.
I can't think of the names
and
right now.
He had this amazing truce that nobody else had, and he was paradise if you join forces with him. You know?
Yeah. Well, he sold the 70 virgins in heaven thing, so I don't know. Siren, I'd like to leave a window of opportunity for you to come back periodically and maybe give us, if you ever come across a cult that you just find fascinating or you would think that we should know about, you want to come on and tell us about them and to the audience. So tell the audience where they can find you on TikTok.
I'm at Siren Warner on TikTok. Siren is spelled S-Y-R-A-N. Warner is spelled like Warner Brothers. Or you can just look up Cult Hunter or I'm Free Melissa Parker on Instagram. If you look me up, though, like, I'm literally the only Siren Warner that walks the earth. So there's only, it's very,
that's
very
pretty cool.
Easy to find me.
I just remembered, I do have one final question, and I'm not going to put you on the spot. I am going to put you on the spot.
Let's do it.
Your picture on your TikTok You are standing there with a colorful, weird background with no shirt and you have some tattoos. What's that picture all about?
I guess, like, okay, when the cult comes after you, you will start to flex on them when you figure out how to sort of fight them back. And, like, the video you saw of me, I put in this thing in there, which is, in the comments, a lot of people's favorite part of the video, where they said, they called me the Shakespeare of disdain.
Yes.
Which is, like...
And you took it as a compliment.
Yeah, and I repurposed this insult that they gave me, and it made me sound totally cool. And it is, like, it was just a terrible, terrible decision they made, because they can't... They're not really capable of making, God, I want to have a... They're not capable of critical thinking. Like, their critical thinking is diminished. So they think something like, I'm going to... Like, this guy is really bad. He's like the Shakespeare of disdain. And to them, it sounds like, oh, he's the worst. But, like, to thinking people, people capable of critical thinking, they're like, you're talking about, like the greatest writer, like, the guy who wrote better than everybody ever... Like, widely known. Like, I mean, it's the most, like, obviously no critical thinking went into that insult. But I would say, like, the posing shirtless with, like, on that thing, it's sort of like a big fuck you is what it is.
Okay. What, to the audience, you got to go check out his TikTok page. Yeah, it's yes. Fantastic. I binged it for the last couple of days because I knew you were coming on, and your videos are not only educational and done, the content and the editing and everything's done just superbly, but they're entertaining as well. So yes. Congratulations on that. And I want everybody to go check out Ciaran yep. Warner on TikTok, the cult hunter.
We'll have
thank
all
you
the
for
links
joining
in
us
the
today.
Show notes as well. Yes.
Yeah, correct. And thank you, and thank you so much for having me on the show. Like, this kind of stuff, it's the more information that is yeah. out there, the easier it is to access, the less victims that you'll have.
Yes,
absolutely.
The more awareness
and,
we're all
and
bringing.
We're going to have you back one day.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah,
thank you again for coming
all right,
on
Ciaran,
the show.
Thank you.
Yes. And once again, we want to thank Ciaran Warner, a.k.a. The Cult Hunter, which I love that title. I mean, he kind of laughs about it, thinks it's a little bit funny and how we got it. But I think it's very fitting, and I like it. I think it's a fun title, and it was such a fun episode to record, wasn't it, Andrew?
It was very fun and educational. And
yes,
if you remember, he said that he didn't give himself that name. The cults gave him that name.
Yes.
So. It kind of ironic, and it's a classic. I think it's just great that he got dubbed the Cult Hunter.
And it's one of those things where I'm sure they meant it as an insult, and he kind of wears it like a badge of honor, right? So
exactly,
it's one of those, just ironic things, kind of like that other name.
And he took it to TikTok, and he's got 150,000 followers now, which
yes.
is just phenomenal. So
exactly, exactly.
Thanks, Ciaran, so much for joining us, and he'll come back. So
yes.
maybe we'll have him on, you know, once or twice a year.
Yeah, for sure. It was
give
very
us updates on
educational and very inspirational and just fun to record. He was a fun guy to talk to.
Yeah, you know, when we saw his TikTok, I didn't know he was a journalist, a professional. Mm-hmm. Like doing this for his career. I thought he was some guy out there just like chasing cults down, like having fun. No, this is his job. So,
right. Yes. And again, on behalf of cult survivors, I always appreciate people who, and it sounds like he was starting to get kind of sucked into that, the body, the cult. I don't think he got fully sucked into it. So at least he understood how people get sucked into it. So he had, I think, a little bit more insight on what it's like to get sucked into a cult. But I thank him on behalf of cult survivors for what he's doing for the community, bringing awareness just like we like to do, Andrew. And so, of course, once again, we want to thank all of you for tuning into Cultimatum. Your support is greatly appreciated. And if you could just take a moment to rate and review our podcast on platforms such as Apple and Spotify. And once again, on Apple, you can give us a full review on there along with rating the podcast. And on Spotify, you can leave comments on each five individual stars. Episode. Yes. there. We got a little commentary back there. And of course,
subconsciously, five stars.
And don't forget to follow, share, and keep listening to all of our latest episodes.
You can also show your support by joining our Facebook group under the name Cultimatum Podcast.
And you can find us on additional social media platforms, including Instagram, TikTok, Pinterest, YouTube, and Threads.
If you have a cult or human trafficking experience that you'd like to share with us, please feel free to contact us at cultimatumpodcast@gmail.com.
And ex-cult members looking for any additional support can always consider joining the Cult Escape and Recovery Group on Facebook.
And if you're interested in hearing more from me, you can find me on my other podcast, Anonymous Andrew, Life and the Choices We Make.
And always, as always, stay safe, stay informed, and remember, you're not alone.